Ladies and gentlemen, it's a very great privilege to have Anatoly Chubais with us a second time since the beginning of the reform. When he was here last time, he outlined to us his plans for privatizing the Russian economy. And I think at that time, many people in Russia and many people in the West doubted whether it would happen, and they doubted whether it would work if it did happen. Well, it did happen. It did work, and Russia now has a bigger privatized sector than any other transition economy, and that is almost entirely due to the unbelievable determination of one man who forced it through against the opposition of a great part of the parliament, a great part of the government, and in the face of incredible personal attacks. Having done that, in November 94, he was made first Deputy Prime Minister, charged with stabilising the Russian economy. At that time, the inflation rate was about 15% per month, and now it's 3% and falling. And I think that these two achievements, privatising Russia and stabilising its economy, are an indication of the greatness of Anatoly Chubais and establish his claim as one of the great world statesmen of this age. Some of us have the privilege of working with his colleagues in the Committee for Economic Reform, and that is a great honour to be associated with his efforts in that way. But I wanted just to tell you one story which I think is illustrative of Mr. Chubais, which is that I think it's an answer to a question that you were asked. What do you think you will be doing in the future? To which he replied, I never think about what could happen to me next month or next year. I only think what is the best thing I can do this week. And I think that is the secret of his success. And we very much look forward to your continued success in the future. Anatoly Chubais.
Thank you. Well, you know, the professor Laird described my achievements in such a way that I think that probably I should immediately go to resign and start to prepare my memoirs. But before I did it, I'd probably spend an hour trying to tell you about the Russian economy now, trying to tell you about the result of 1995 year in the Russian economy, because to my understanding, 1995 year was the crucial year for Russia, for Russian economy. That was the year when the main trends in Russian economy completely changed, some of them in the opposite direction. I'll try to tell you what was the way, how could we did it, and what is the result of the situation. At the same time, what are the main problem we have now in the Russian economy, and what we're going to do. Professor Laird reminded that in the end of 1994, the inflation was 15% per month. That's true. In January 1995, we had 18% per month inflation rate. The hard currency reserve of central bank was less than $1 billion in mid-January 1995. And that was the time when we had to sail daily from 200 million to 300 million. And having 1 billion hard currency reserves in the mid-January 1995, that was one step before the general collapse for the Russian economy. The situation was really very difficult, and not just you could see it not just in the economic figures and economic data, but the general anticipation of the public was extremely bad. And it was a lot of rumors that next day central bank will abolish the ruble or will close all current accounts for the commercial bank or something like this. So it was almost the situation of panic of the financial market. And we understood that the only way for overcoming the situation is to be as tough as it possible and to make as radical step as it possible. Nobody believed at that time, in the beginning of 1995, that there is a chance for approval of the budget in the Russian parliament. And there was a reason for it, because the budget for 1993 was accepted in Russia in December of 1993. The budget for 1994 was accepted and supported by the parliament in June 1994. But in 1995, from the very beginning, we decided that we need to get support for the budget as soon as possible. We prepared this budget. We decided to decline the budget deficit from 10.5% in 1994 to a maximum 5% in 1995. We decided to completely cancel the inflationary way of financing state budget deficit. We decided to forbid central bank to give credits for the financing of the federal budget. And at that time, almost everybody said that there is no chances for getting support for this kind of budget in the Russian parliament. But again, we don't try to discuss the general options. We're just trying to do as much as we can. And we achieved this result. In mid-March 1995, we get support from the parliament for the Russian budget with 5% deficit to GDP. And that was the first fundamental step. At the same time, we started a number of strong steps for liberalizing Russian export trade. First of all, in the oil and energy sector. By that time, we had so-called quotas and licenses, which means that each company which would like to export, for example, oil, need to get special decisions, special permission license in the Ministry for Foreign Economic Affairs, and only after it, it could start export. At that time, it was a huge differences in the internal and external oil prices. I guess the internal prices was, I think, 55 or 60% from the external price, and you could imagine how profitable it was to export oil. That's why we decided that we have to liberalize it as soon as possible in order to canceling quotas and licenses, we need to close at least, I think, half of the Ministry of Foreign Economic Affairs, which is giving these licenses and quotas. But we did it. We did it by the end of February, completely canceling the quotas and licenses that completely liberalized the oil export, which is immediately lead to the increase of the export of oil and the oil products, and which has immediately led to the increase of the budgetary revenues from this sector of the national economy, and which immediately led to the undermining the corruption, which was especially in this sector on the very high level. That was the second important steps we made at this time. At the same way, we started to negotiate with the IMF the arrangement for the standby for Russia. And we also were successful. By the end of March, we signed the agreement for standby arrangement with IMF. All at the same time, we changed our fiscal policy, which became much more responsible. Central bank increased the mandatory reserves of the commercial banks for 20%. And all this started to change the macroeconomic environment starting from March 1995. Inflation from 18% in January fell down to 11% in March. The hard currency reserve start to increase little bit starting from March and April at the same time. So that was the first part of the annual program for 1995. And by the mid-1995, we got the approved budget. We got the increasing hard currency reserves. We got the declining inflation rate in the country. But at the same time, that was just the statistical data. But if you will, if you would try to read any Russian newspapers in the mid-1995, you will find that all economic experts in the country, that all bankers in the country, all entrepreneurs in the country, discussing the inflation for the second half of 1995. They discuss will inflation, monthly inflation rate will be 15% per month, or it will be 20% per month, or it will be 30% per month. And the reason for this kind of general understanding was the previous Russian economic history, because in 1992, in 1993, in 1994, the first half of the year was more or less successful. Inflation was went down. But the second half of the year, it was increase of inflation rate. Like example, in 1994, when inflation by the mid-1994 came down for 5% by August, and then it's again rise for almost 20% by the end of 1994. So at that time, at the mid-1995, everybody was convinced that Russia, the next step will be the hyperinflation in Russia, that the exchange rate of ruble to dollars, which was about 4.5 thousand ruble per dollar in mid-1995, will go to the 10,000 ruble or 15,000 ruble. So that was the general understanding of everybody, except the Russian government and probably Professor Laird, who was also did not agree with such type of thing. But you easily understand that this understanding itself is extremely dangerous, because that's the problem of inflation expectation. It means that the market believe that inflation will go up, that the exchange rate will go down. The market believe in it. It means that they include it in their contracts for the second half of 1995. So it was one of the dangerous situation, and we had a strong discussion in the government. What should we do for the second half of 1995 for stopping this expectation, for destroying it? And our understanding was that we should not defend our position, but we should start the new aggressive attack came from the government. And that this decision was made in June 1995. We prepared the program for the second half of 1995 and start to implement it. One of the major steps was announcement of the ruble-dollar corridor. We investigated different possibilities, different options, investigated the idea of the fixed exchange rate, investigated the idea of the pegging exchange rate, but finally we decided just to introduce corridor for the ruble-dollar exchange rate for 3 months. We decided to introduce it between 4,300 and 4,900. At that time, it was considered as something, I don't know, if not stupid, then unrealistic, at least, because of the expectation which has existed at that time. But we understood that the major macroeconomic trends will make it possible. We understood that the trends of the monetary base, the trends of M2 and net international reserves and net domestic assets make it possible for us to keep exchange rate into the corridor during nearest 3 months. So that became kind of Russian national sport to monitor will Russian government be able to keep exchange rate in the announced corridor or no. But very soon it became clear that it's absolutely realistic. It's absolutely realistic. And that was very important move against the inflation. But it was not the only step we made at that time. We make our tax collection policy much stronger than before. We made some very important steps for against the company who did not pay taxes in Russia, and when we thought what should be the company where we started this attack, we decided that it should be Gazprom, which is the company headed by Russian Prime Minister before he became Prime Minister. And we did it in July and August 1995. We increased the excise for gas. We canceled the number of льготas for Gazprom. And after it has became clear that we are quite serious. And it's make us possible to increase the budget revenues in September, October. At the same time, we start to design the controlling system or managing system for the natural monopolies. For the first time for the last 5 years, we start to control the prices and the costs in the major natural monopoly, in railway system, in Gazprom, in Russian telecommunication industry. So that was the steps which were made in the second half of 1995. By the end of the year, it became clear that the major goals which were declared in the beginning of 1995, we achieved. The inflation really went down. In December, it was 3.2% per month. The hard currency reserves of central bank, which was, I said, $1 billion in the beginning of 1995, increase for $12 billion in December 1995. We was able to keep corridor for exchange rate, and we even announced the new corridor, not for 3 but for 6 months, for the first 6 months of 1996. And now we are sure that we shall be able to keep this corridor. Finally, we was able to keep the budget deficit even below the targets which was announced by ourselves. There is no final data, but I think that it will not be more than 3% of GDP in 1995. So that has completely changed the whole macroeconomic situation in Russia. The final step was the budgetary discussion for the 1996 budget in the Russian parliament, which was also finished successfully, and the Russian budget for 1996 was signed by President Yeltsin at 31 of December 1995. That's the first time in our history we get the budget before the starting of the financial year. And now I think that one of the major positive economic results were achieved. But you know, at the same time, I'm speaking with the professionals in economics, and I'm speaking about the economic problem, but it's easily understand that all we did in 1995, we have to rethink it, taking into account the parliamentary election in December and the June 96 presidential election. And I said to you about the positive results in the national economy, in the macroeconomic situation in 1995, but at the same time, I have to say that if we shall try to check what is the political dividends from this kind of economic results, the situation will not be as much optimistic as in economic discussion. You know, I said that hard currency reserve increased from $1 billion to $12 billion in central bank, but I don't think that it's influenced a lot for the voting procedure somewhere, I don't know, in Far East, or anyway in Siberia, that for the ordinary people it's very important what is the level of hard currency reserve in the central bank. Probably what is the level of the budget deficit toward the GDP. I think that the only visible result of these changes in the economic situation was the declining of inflation. But at the same time, as I said, we had 3% monthly inflation rate, which is terrible inflation. It's awful inflation, and it still affects people who dislike it, who protest against it. So that's why this economic result could not completely change the situation. And in addition, as usually, there is, I guess, the general rule that the positive result are not as much visible as a negative result. Just one example, due to this kind of policy, we have a huge ruble appreciation process in 1995. The ruble appreciation was almost 60% during 1 year. You could easily understand that it brings a lot of additional dividends for the importers and brings a lot of heavy problem for exporters. And in each Russian newspaper, you could get a lot of criticism against the government from the Russian exporters. But you will not find any positive remarks from the importers at the same reason. So that's why we understood that the political outcome of the financial stabilization in Russia is not very optimistic. And generally, I guess that the pre-election time, it's not the best time for the financial stabilization. So if you will, in your professional life, will somehow need to stabilize your economy, I would recommend to do it not before the election, but to choose other time for this kind of activity. So that is the result of 1995 in the Russian economy. At the same time, I would not like to describe situation better than it is. It is still extremely complicated economic situation in Russia. One of the major problems, that is the problem of the living standards in Russia, which is extremely low, fantastically low. We have the dollar average wage. In December, I guess it will be $150 per month. You could imagine what is it. At the same time, in Ukraine, they have, I guess, 75 or 80, do you know, Richard? Something like this, I guess, dollar per month. In Georgia, they have $7 per month. So it's a question of comparison. Nevertheless, the real standards of living in Russia is extremely low, and we still have a huge, fantastic differences between the richest and poorest part of population. And at the same time, I just want to say that was for the first time in the Russian economic history when, due to the declining of the inflation, the differences between the highest and lowest class start to be less than before during the 1995. But at the same time, nevertheless, the standards of living is very low, extremely low. We still have a huge delay in payments both in the budgetary sectors and non-budgetary sectors of the Russian economy. We have the regions with very high unemployment rate in Russia. And in general terms, I think that the real restructuring in the Russian economy is just starting now. So that's why the problems for 1996 is very serious. And I guess that the presidential election in 1996, in June 1996, will be probably the final and major political crossroad for Russia. Frankly speaking, I don't believe in the chances of Mr. Zhirinovsky. I don't believe in the chances of my friend Grigory Yevlinsky. I guess that it will be very clear and transparent choice between the communist, Mr. Zyuganov, and the Democrats, Mr. Yeltsin. To go forward or to go back, that will be the kind of choice which Russia will have in June 1996. And my understanding that if Russia will be able to make right decision in this choice, it means that in economic terms, Russia will really become one of the most fastly developing country in the world. That's my understanding. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that wonderful talk. Now we've got about 20 minutes for questions.
Well, the Loans for Shares program was started September 1995. That's a program when we give shares of the major Russian companies, most of them are oil-producing company, telecommunication company, at the tender condition, we gave it for the loans which given to the government by the winners of the tenders. If we calculated the general amount of money which was paid from September till December on this privatization transaction in Russia, it will be about $2.5 billion for 2 months. What could I say now? I could say that that is the absolutely new stage of developing the privatization in Russia. We had already finished the first stage of the privatization, and we have already at least 70% of GDP being produced in the private sector of the Russian economy. That's why the 1995 privatization and the loan for shares program was not the program for increasing the proportion of the GDP being produced by the private sector, but that was a program of raising the money for the budget and raising the money as an investment for this company. I think that we made very important steps, but at the same time, I'm not satisfied completely by the result of this program. We've got a lot of criticism. Some of this criticism was not just in the Russian, but in the Western press. I consider that at least part of this criticism is right. I'm not satisfied by some of the condition of the tenders. I'm not satisfied that we allowed it for the company who organized the tender being one of the participants of the tender. I guess it was not the best decision we could make. But at the same time, you know, Russia, it's the transitional economy, and the whole country, the transition. The same stakes of the block of shares, the same stakes which were privatized two years ago, was privatized for nothing. For nothing. Now privatized it for $2.5 billion. Next year we shall be able to privatize it for $20 billion. But for reaching these results next year, we need to pass this first transitional stage, which was passed in the end of 1995. That's my understanding of this part of privatization program.
What effect will the elections, the result of the elections and the big strong showing of the communists in the Duma have on the financial community in Russia, particularly the banks?
Well, first of all, I would not exaggerate the general political outcome of the victory of the communists in the parliament election. You know, just two figures. In 1993 election, December election in Duma, Zhirinovsky got 23%, communists got 12%. In 1995 election, Zhirinovsky got 12%, communists got 23%. So they just change each other. I love them both, but but I don't think that it will produce some terrible disaster in the Russian political life or something like this. So that's my understanding. But you know, speaking about the financial markets, I do think that now the real investment, especially foreign investment in Russia, completely stopped for at least for 6 months. And that is the result of the political situation. Probably in more extent that is the result of the future election, but not the parliamentary election. So that is the negative influence for the economic situation in Russia. I think that it's not the only one negative influence, but at the same time, I wouldn't exaggerate it, you know. So it means that in economic terms, Russia is already ready to grow. In political terms, we have this 6 months delay, which means that after the 6 months, Russia either will have an extraordinary economic growth or will collapse. That's the choice which we shall have now.
Matter
Well, first of all, according to the Russian Constitution, the power of president is incomparable with the power of the parliament. And let's imagine that we are communists, all of us, and we are in the parliamentary election in Russia now. What could we do in parliament if we want to do something in economic problem? First of all, I think that they would not like to get real responsibility, which means they would not like to change the government. They would not like really to get responsibility for the economic situation 6 months before the election. That's the first. The second, if nevertheless they will try to force the government to change the economic policy, you know, it's very easy. It's a very complicated task because they need, at the first, they need to change the budget. The budgetary procedure in Russia takes at least 3 months, but better 4. Budgetary procedure without the government is impossible in Russia. So it's not very easy to do it. That's the first. The second, they need to change to push government to cancel the exchange, the corridor for ruble dollar corridor, which is not easy to do. Then they need to force central bank to give direct credits for the government. It's not an easy to do if both central bank and government would not like to do it, you know. So if I would be a communist now, I would be in quite a difficult situation trying to destroy the economic policy in Russia. But if we're speaking not about the pre-election time, but we're speaking about the Zyuganov, the president kind of policy, I think that he will have two options. The options number one, to forget everything which was said before and implement the responsible economic policy. The options number two, to try to do at least something of what was said before. I could describe it in more detailed way if we would have a time, but my understanding that the timing for the second options, maximum timing for the second options, 3 months. 3 months if they will not try, to redistribute property. If they will try, I think it will not take 3 months. It will take much less for being completely out of the power. So that's my understanding. But the problem is, what will be the price? What will be the price Russia will pay for this kind of experiment? My understanding that price could be extremely high. And my understanding that if they will try to do what they say now, the price will be blood, and a lot of blood in Russia. I don't know whether they will be able to take this way. They had, as you know, a lot of blood experience in the Russian history. I don't know whether they was able to withdraw some lessons from the experience or not. Time will show.
Mr. Tobias, when will you open up the ability for foreign investment in the Russian oil sector? When will you liberalize the Russian oil sector?
Well, if you are speaking about the export of oil, it's already liberalized. If we are speaking about the foreign participation in Russian oil sector, we have a number of joint stock company in oil sector which is producing and exported oil now, and even have some additional privilege comparing with the Russian company. But at the same time, probably your question connected with the prohibition for foreigners to participate in the loan for share options for company Yukos, first of all. That's true. It was really prohibited. You know, we have had
foreign investment is prohibited in Russian oil.
Who say it to you?
Very little is about it.
It's good news for me, but I don't know nothing about it. It's not exactly that true, you know. Let me at least think that I know anything about the condition for the foreigners in the Russian economy. So I'll try to give you answer. The prohibition was for the foreign participation in the tender, loans for share tender for the company Yukos, which is the biggest Russian oil producer company, which has had the reserves for at least for two centuries later. Even if we shall take the whole land for share auctions, it was 24 companies which were sailed on these auctions. Six of these 24 companies was forbidden for foreigners, and 18 was allowed for foreigners. On more general terms, there is no general prohibition for foreign participation in the oil sector. There is no general prohibition for foreign participation in Russian companies. So there is no some limit that foreigners could not buy more than 50% or more than 75%. No such type of prohibition in the Russian legislation. So I don't think that, speaking in pragmatical terms, I don't think that any limits which exist now for foreigners in Russia, which exist but which is extremely low, I don't think that there is these limits is really prevent foreign participation in Russia. That's my understanding. You know, the Ministry of Economy and Finance Ministry and the Russian government as a whole is a bureaucratic system. I think that even the Great Britain government is also a bureaucratic system. There is some rules which is vetted into the bureaucratic system. One of the rules that if you got the instruction from high authority, from president, and fixed timing for the fulfillment of this instruction, you must do it. You must do it. Speaking about this concrete problem, unfortunately, Minister of Economy and Finance Ministry was not able to do it in time. That was a mistake. What is the personal outcome of this mistake? Minister Yasin and Minister Paskov were informed and instructed that they made this mistake, and they should not make it once again. That's all. The deal is over. You should forget about it forever. Nothing personal changes on the highest level. No Minister Yasin, neither Minister Panskov will be replaced, and this problem is already completely solved. Well, you know, we in 1995 had the standby arrangement, as I said, and we had the monthly targets on the six main economic aggregates on the macro level, and that was the first time in Russian history when each month, each of those targets was completely fulfilled, completely under the limit. Now we are on the finishing stage in the negotiation about the EFF, Extended Financial Facility, loan with the IMF. I just discussed it with Stanley Fischer, with other officials from IMF, and we hope that we shall be able to sign the EFF arrangement by the end of January, beginning of February. As you know, we already signed the agreement with the London Club, which gives Russia rescheduling in the Russian debts for 25 years. We are now in a good shape for finishing our discussion with the Paris Club. I hope we shall do it, which means that in terms of the Russian relation with the International Financial Organization and the Paris and London Club, we are now in a very good situation. The background for it, that is the IMF monitoring of the Russian macroeconomic situation and fulfillment of the targets which were accepted by the Russian government and central bank.
Yes, do you mind to hint at that?
Well, I think that, first of all, even in 1995, we have had some sectors of the national economy which was growth. Example, the non-ferrous metal producing increased for 14%. Chemical industry increased for 12%. Petrochemical industry increased for 11%. The construction of the apartment increased for 14% in 1995. If we're speaking about the future engine for economic growth, I guess that it will be, in general terms, it will be the domestic demand. But in more pragmatic terms, I guess that what will be the most important engine which will start to operate before the mid-1996 in Russia, which will lead to the economic growth, it will be the declining of the interest rate in the Russian financial system. I'm sure that we already have the precondition for the declining of this interest rate. I'm sure that we shall be able to have this real declining, which is now extremely high. We have the Treasury bill market profitability in November for 10% per month. It's unacceptable. And it suppress the interest rate in the whole financial system. So I'm sure that we shall be able to manage this problem, and I believe that to make loans, to make credits of commercial bank available for the thousands of Russian company, it will be the real engine for them. Well, you know, I'm not responsible for the Ministry for Foreign Affairs, and I could not comment the appointment of Minister Primakov, but my understanding is that a major reason for the making or not making investment in Russia, that's the general political and general economic situation. I don't think that the replacement of Mr. Kozarev for Mr. Primakov, or Mr. Primakov for anybody else, will able to really change the business strategy of the potential Russian investors.
If you look at the inflation picture for the next 3 to 6 months, what do you think are the major factors influencing the inflation and how they relate to the electoral process?
Well, I think that the major factors is the budget deficit, the trends in monetary base and M2, the velocity of money, so that's the classical instruments. And my understanding that we prepare it for the declining of inflation in 1996, both in terms of the macroeconomic aggregates and in terms of the inflationary expectation. The very fact that the autumn of 1995 was the first autumn in the Russian modern economic history when inflation did not go up but went down, the very fact was extremely important. I believe that by the mid-1996, the monthly inflation rate in Russia will go down 1%. For sure, we shall have some pressure because of the presidential election. My understanding that the good economy or good economic policy, good economy, that is probably the best pre-election policy which is ever exist. But I think that not everybody in the Russian powerful elite will completely agree with me. And I think that we shall have some discussion about this point. But my understanding that our main task is to fulfill budget. To fulfill budget, not violating the budget data. It will lead to the declining of inflation. It will lead to the positive both economic and political results. But it's easy to say, but not easy to implement. So let's wait and see. And you know, the major target of the budget for 1995 it could be a little bit strange, but the major target was to have a budget. I mean, no, I'm speaking about 1995. That was in your question. I said to you that the previous budget was accepted in the mid of the year or in the end of the year. And in these terms, the 1995 was the first year in the Russian modern economic history when Russia had a budget, which is fundamentally important in terms of the fiscal discipline, in terms of the predictability of the financial situation, in terms of the transparency of the financial fiscal policy of the government. So in all terms, that's the fundamentally important. And if we fulfill a budget in 1994 for 60% in terms of expenses, the budget for 1995 will fulfill for 93%, I guess. But at the same time, that's the overall figure. If we shall moderate the expenses for the different items, you will see very different picture from 115% till 60%, which is very bad, which is extremely bad. And so it means that in 1995, we first of all achieve the real control over the budget as a whole, but was not able to fulfill the whole budget as it should be. So for 1996, that will be the target. And speaking about the GKO yield, my forecast is a little bit dangerous because it's lead to the changes in financial markets, you know. So if you don't mind, we shall speak with you after the finishing election. Okay?
Well, I think that unfortunately our time is running out. I think you've seen very clearly today the two great characteristics of Anatoly Chubais, which have made him so successful. The first is his political skill, including answering questions. And the other is his extraordinary clarity of mind. And I don't know what he would say about how he survived, but I have quite a distinct impression that it is mainly because he had such a clear view and analysis and belief in his analysis of what had to be done, that he could stand up to the buffetings which would have pushed other people who weren't so clear in their head off target. I didn't mention that Mr. Chubais was, until he became a politician, an academic, so that you can see that there are some advantages of that. Thank you very, very much.